Welcome to Paper Money, the biweekly podcast covering the business side of the game industry, from Warhammer to Warhammer 40K, from Games Workshop to Games Workshop. I'm Ben Clark.
I'm Brett Kim.
Today is June 6th, 2011.
You know, I think that's appropriate with, you know, with the Finecast.
That, I wanted to cover the entire The Hobby.
The Hobby, where the whole hobby is now contained. Yeah. Because I don't believe Lord of the Rings constitutes The Hobby. It is Lord of the Rings.
That's right. For those of you not familiar with Games Workshop, they always refer to their, basically themselves, as The Hobby.
Yeah, they miss my air quotes because, you know, it's a little visual.
That's correct. That's correct. But today's June 6th. I'd say happy D-Day, but that's not really correct.
Happy beginning of the end of World War II?
Yeah, that would be another good one. Although some might point to El Alamein or even Midway.
There's a lot of things that one could point to. And the answer is, you know, June 6th, D-Day, 67 years ago, and we haven't had another one since.
Amen, brother.
There we go. That's what I call a successful invasion.
There you go. Our show preview this week, corrections, none. As usual, we're right all the time. We're just going to have to pull that section, Rhett, because we're right all the time.
Well, we'll just tell people that right at the beginning as part of our show intro.
Alternately, we'll just ignore our listeners from here on out when they point out we're flagrantly wrong.
be like some of the other manufacturers that we speak of.
That's right. We do have some news this week. We do not have a guest this week. Wanted to get Randall Bills on the show, but I'm still frothing about one of our news items, so we'll get to that in a minute. And as for commentary, we were going to talk about summer releases, but Rhett came up with an even better idea based on some recent experiences in the store. So we'll be talking about retailer-friendly packaging. So, all right, let's start off with the news.
The news.
Okay, the most interesting story on the business side this week is Hasbro laid off 75 game employees. Now, what they're doing is they're basically consolidating all of their game operations at the headquarters in Providence, Rhode Island. And they're creating a, quote, center of excellence for Hasbro Games.
Ooh.
In the media, so they're moving about 70 employees. I'm assuming that our good friends Mike Hurdle and Mike Gray, if not already based out of that area, will soon be. And they laid off about 75 game employees in the process. And I'm sure it has nothing to do with the fact that they missed sales estimates in the fourth quarter because U.S. demand was down for games and puzzles.
No, I mean, why would you do that?
Exactly.
Actually, at this time of year, I suspect that that might actually be true.
Yeah, well, you know what they do is they bury this announcement. Oops, sorry if I bumped the mic there. So those of you listening at home, if there's a loud crash. This is the time of year, by the way, when you want to bury a news story if you're Hasbro. Okay, it's after Memorial Day. Everyone's on vacation, and they'll have forgotten that you laid off a bunch of people when you announce your huge gobbing post-Christmas profits.
Yeah.
So.
Well, you know, and it's a number of people, but let's face it, their divisions, and this is Hasbro proper as opposed to, you know, some of their divisions. Mm-hmm. You know, the divisions, like, example, Wizards of the Coast, this would be somewhere around 20%.
Right. But I guess without knowing how big their game division is, you can't necessarily figure out the scale. But I think that's a lot of people.
Yeah.
In the game industry, that's a lot of people. So, and I wonder if some of those people are going to try and move to Roseville, Minnesota.
Well, given that I'm not sure where they're all leaving from and moving to, but, you know, at one point they were in Massachusetts.
Look, if you want to work in this industry, you better not get attached to a locale.
That's right. You know, Springfield, Mass is really nice, and I'll leave it at that.
Right. We're mentioning the hometowns of all these game companies, and half of our listeners are going, what? We got guys in Sweden trying to look up Roseville, Minnesota on a map. Fantasy Flight Games is in Roseville, and then Springfield is that's not Mattel.
No, that's Hasbro. That's where Milton Bradley.
Gotcha. No, the Game Center stuff, though, is now they're going to put it all in Providence where Hasbro's headquarters is.
Right.
So, all right.
Yeah,
anyways.
Hasbro has always been in Providence, and Milton Bradley was in Parker Brothers and, you know, all these other things. And we won't go on.
Well, hopefully it'll be a short move for those guys.
That's right.
So, but that said, Another news story. This is one of those crossover news stories, and I really wanted to throw it out there. Famous artist brings exhibit to Atlantic City. Internationally acclaimed artists J. and K. Kiefer brought the art of the game to the boardwalk in Atlantic City today. This is from NBC40.net, which is a local NBC affiliate in Atlantic City. They are international acclaimed board game artists. Okay, now, a lot of famous people have their paintings in Hollywood, but I couldn't find out if they were like, you know, being the game geek, I'm like, oh, what, did they do the covers of any of the games that I have? You know, did they do the cover for, you know, Squad Leader? and
No, they didn't.
No, they did. And it seems what they do is they do pop art type renditions of like a board game, you know, like the dog sitting on boardwalk and stuff like that. It looked really cool, but it wasn't, you know, they're internationally acclaimed artists whose subject is board games, as far as I could tell. Now, again, if there's listeners out there who tell me that Jim and Kathleen Kiefer do in fact do lots and lots of board game covers, or, you know, maybe just did Stratego or Scrabble or something, that'd be cool. But I did research it. I did look, and I couldn't find anything that they had done that resembled games that we like. So I was hoping they did some BattleTech art, you know, or no, that's not true, really.
Well, I was going to say, and, you know, you did note whose room, you know, whose homes they hung in Hollywood.
Yeah. For the record, yeah, if you're the kind of artist who draws art that's featured in BattleTech, your art will not hang in the home of Barry Manilow, James Cameron, Ed Harris, Sharon Stone, Britney Spears, and Steven Spielberg. It'll hang in my home and Rhett's home, but it will not be in these other homes. Just to let you know, artists who are just starting out, you know, and you're in high school and you're doodling, don't doodle that stuff. Doodle stuff.
I was going to say, you know, but there are some famous Hollywood gamers. You know, we just don't talk about them very often, nor do they talk about themselves as such very often.
Yeah, well, Vin Diesel's pretty mum about it, yeah.
Vin Diesel is out there, and Robin Williams and Billy Crystal, both big miniatures gamers.
Really?
Yeah. GW gamers.
They're part of the hobby.
They are part of the hobby in a big way. They probably supported 1 year of the hobby from the size of their collection, so I've heard.
Ah, okay. Interesting. I didn't know that. All right, let's move on. Speaking of records, Qatar sets Monopoly record. The world record for the largest Monopoly board game was broken by Q.Media Events. Just for the record, those of you playing along at home, that's all lowercase Q.Media Events. It wasn't broken by a person or an organization. It was organized by a PR firm. I really hate that. Anyways, this is in the Doha Exhibition Center for this World Trade Show. It's based on the physical – this is the largest Monopoly game ever, based on the physical size of the playing board, and it must consist of functional game pieces, including dice, houses, and hotels built to size. So the Monopoly board game it measured 216.97 square meters. It's huge. But that's square meters, though, so it's not really like 200 meters on a side.
Yeah, is it 200 meters on a side? Those are actual houses on Boardwalk and Art Place.
Yeah, that's. But suffice to say, 200 meters square, that's still pretty huge. So, all right, beating the previous world record, which was held by Germany in 2007. So it's now becoming like a World Cup event.
Yeah, well, you know, Germany is probably going to take it back or, you know, invade. One of the two.
No, they're not going to invade. They'll just take... German. Actually, the Germans, they're busy bailing out the Greeks. They just do not have time to worry about Qatar's Monopoly game.
That's right.
Okay, but enough international finance. Let's get to the story that's really bugging me. The BattleTech 25th anniversary intro set sold out in 10 days. Randall, if you're listening, I'm angry about this.
You know, they're not happy either. And they're really saddened by the fact that their next print run might actually follow the same suit. They're underprinting what they need because they have financial needs to get other games out as well.
They do, one of which is I'm very excited about seeing. But on the other hand, I really hope that they manage to avoid the multi-man publishing trap of our core product is not here.
Well, at least they had the advantage that that's the intro product. They still have the core and the main rule book.
True.
So with that in production, at least they have a point of entry.
Yes, but geeks like us are going to get the core rule set. But I'm going to use that intro set to bring my son and his friends into the game. So
did Did they mention it sold out in 10 days? That's usually a sign of because it was successful.
It was. It was too successful. I'm angry because I didn't get one. All right. Anyways, that's good news to hear that, especially for Catalyst. We talked about them last year having some money issues. It sounds like this year is going to be a banner year for them, and with some really big games. And by big games, I mean huge physically games. This one was a big set. Leviathans is a big set. I don't know if their their European game is on the schedule yet. Brett, do you know?
I haven't heard anything one way or the other on that one yet.
So I should say, even so, a couple of big games, and I'm sure they'll have more for this summer. And our final news story of the week, and I wish I could go into depth on this, folks, but honestly, my brain stopped working after about the first sentence. This is a quote from one of the writers of the new Candyland movie. Are you all ready? Sit down. If you're driving, get into the right-hand lane. You may need to pull over. And I quote, "We envision it as Lord of the Rings, but set in a world of candy. We don't see it as a movie based on a board game, although it has characters from that world and takes the idea of people finding themselves in a world that happens to be made entirely of candy, where there are huge battles going on. We're going for real comedy, real action, and real emotions at stake."
Okay. Real emotion.
Those of you listening in your car, pull over now. Trust me, because
the tears will up in your eyes from the level of laughter.
It's Lord of the Rings. I'm just picturing the Battle of Helm's Deep with giant peppermints.
I believe that was done by the National Lampoon at one point.
I don't know.
Under the title Board of the Rings.
They're the people who just happened to find themselves in a world gone mad, made of candy. Or a world of candy gone mad, yeah. Or mad candy. Wow, it's Lord of the Rings, but with food.
You know, the evil villain is Tartar, and, you know.
I'm just agog. J.R.R. Tolkien, I'm hoping, is having a chuckle in his grave. So... If we're lucky, though, someone will write a language for the peppermint stick people. You know, just
if it becomes as popular as Klingon, then
maybe they just meant that there was also a dwarf tossing scene in this movie. Anyways, okay, that's our funny news item, as opposed to the rest of them. So so let's move on to our commentary, because I don't think we're really going to top the last comment there. Origins Game Fair is coming up at the end of the month. We're going to talk a little bit about new releases and how important they are for the summer season. Are they all that important? Because really there's a lot of product coming out. But then Rhett had a couple of experiences at the store that made us realize we need to talk about retail-friendly packaging all over again. We've talked a little bit about this concept. I think I talked about boxes last year. But Rhett, tell us about the couple of products you ran into at the store this last week that made you say, no, we need to talk about this.
Well, you know, we had two of them come in this week. I should say two different companies come in with products, since one of them gave us numerous products of challenge. The first one was the new... Chaosal.
You can't just say Chaosal.
Is it Chaosal?
I don't know. Was Mark in the store? Did he tell you how to pronounce it? I always thought
it was
Chaosal.
I can never get this right. I've read it. I've seen the words. It doesn't roll off my tongue, unfortunately.
So tell us about the box, because I was raving about the huge plastic castle pieces that were in this game when I was helping him many years ago on it. Yeah.
I'll start with the pro side. Very beautiful game. Very nice play. Everything about this is top shelf. This is a great game. It has only one downside. It's about 17 inches per side, which means it's a challenge to fit on a shelf that's geared to fit something that's, you know, like 12 inches.
Now, how deep is the box? About 4.5 inches?
17 by 17, and it's probably about 4... I'd say about 4 inches deep. It's almost as deep as the large Fantasy Flight boxes.
Okay, which, and I think those are, if not, I think they're 4 or 4.5. 4 is about the limit on a box maker. But folks, to give you guys an idea, an Axis and Allies box is approximately, or Rune Wars or Dust Tactics or any of the big box games you see now, are usually about 12 by 22 to 23 inches by about 4 inches deep. Okay, so 17 on a side is huge. There's no thin side to put this thing on a shelf.
No, not at all. And the problem with it is it leaves retailers with a couple of choices. Placing on top shelf if they've got a space, but it's a very heavy box, not a really handy spot to have if it's over a customer's head, because, you know, you don't really want to drop a box this weight on their head. And it does weigh a bit. I believe they're about 10 pounds, I think he said. They were some crazy, crazy
wow.
heavy game. The other thing is you can put it on the ground, which is a really bad place to have your game displayed as a new product. And the last choice is they don't bring it back in after they see how big it is, which is the worst choice possible.
Ooh, I hadn't even thought of that one.
Yeah, I've already had retailers make a general comment along those lines, having explored this, not just with this game, but with other games that cause, you know, packaging problems to them. There were a couple of years ago, there was a round box game, so to speak, and it would roll off the shelf. It had no flat edge. Most retailers' response to this was to stop carrying the product.
The
one I will give it is the Bullet package. Mm-hmm. Does have a flat edge to it, so it can actually be set flat.
Is that the one with the silver pantyhose thing on the top of the tube?
It looks, you know,
like a
it
bullet.
Looks
yeah, I guess.
Like about a 120mm 45 cartridge.
Okay, excellent. But now, see, let's talk about that for a minute.
I do want to, before we just mm-hmm. linger on one there, let's
okay.
add the other two to the equation.
All right.
Which is the new Carcassonne came out, and Carcassonne, trying to be cool, came out with their Peoples as a package. One of them was a large Carcassonne size game, fitting into their normal, probably about 8 inches across, but it's star-shaped, as it's a Peoples. They also did another game whose name escapes me, which was something like Shadow or Smoke or something. It was something about being translucent. And the package is multicolored, translucent, and a little people. Now, it fits in the palm of your hand, but again, it's star-shaped. And in this one's case, there's no name on it. There's no label whatsoever. Not that you would confuse it with any other Carcassonne product, since it doesn't look like it, but an odd choice all the same.
Okay, so now we've gone from one extreme to the other. We have a really huge game that you can't shelve anywhere to a really tiny game that you can't shelve anywhere. And now, folks, lest you think this is an issue, 2 years ago I was talking to Mayfair and Larry Rosnay is their production guy over there, and he was so happy because he had just gotten rid of the last of the Tube Train games. Okay, now for those of you who don't remember, there was a lot of the Empire Builder spinoffs had been sold by Mayfair since, well, it was the early 80s, the mid-80s, they thought this was a good idea?
I would say it's probably towards the mid-80s.
Yeah, it was the late 80s or mid-90s, I think, or early 90s. They had this great idea that they would save money by packaging the train games with – they would roll up the map, the laminated map sheet. They would mount it, and that would be the packaging. And they'd put the game money and the markers and the chips and the cards inside the tube. And the tube was about, I don't know, 4 to 5 inches around and about two to three feet long. I guess poster size, right? So about 22 by to 24 inches long.
Right.
There was no way to shelve it. It either stuck out into the shelves, stuck up too tall on the shelves. You had to put it on the end or nowhere. Anyways, they finally gave up on them entirely and had to go and repackage the entire line. But they sat on these things for, you know, 10 to 15 years in some cases. It was awful.
Yeah, they were a real problem. And, you know, we've seen a number of odd games.
And you couldn't ship them. That was the problem.
No, you can't ship them because they're so soft. The plastic is not rigid like a cardboard shipping tube. So everything would crush them, which defeated the point of, I think, having them as a rolled map so that you could unroll it and it would be nice and it would be flat and all those nice other things that come with that. It would now have wrinkles having been crushed.
Yeah. So there's a lot of ways you can screw this up. Now, in terms of the Carcassonne stuff, It looks really cool. But you, as a gamer, I want you to think about this. It looks really cool on the shelf at the game store, maybe, if you can find it because it's not been sandwiched somewhere. How are you going to stick that in with your game collection? Most gamers are pressed for space anyway, and the only way that thing is going to be cool is if you're storing it face out. Right? I mean, if you have, like, Elvis collector plate hangers and then you do meeples on there, that might work. But this is going to be hard for you to store. It is basically a point-of-purchase mechanism, or I'm going to buy this on Fun Again online because it sounds like a good idea online.
Well, and, you know, one of the bigger problems that it leads to is for anybody out there considering making a game, one of my first...
Thank you for segueing into that, because that's where I was going
to
go next.
I was going to say, one of the first things that I've always tried to say to people when they ask, you know, what should my game look like in a sense? And my response is, go to a store and look at it and see what your product looks like on the shelf. Because when a product's new, it gets front-faced. When a product has been past its initial releases, it gets put on the shelf with 1,000 other titles. And it has to compete edge-on with 1,000 other titles.
Exactly. And now here's the thing. I'm going to give you a couple of practical aspects, even beside the retail thing, is one, what's the case pack going to be? And two, because that's the minimum that you're going to sell these things in. Are you going to sell them in – Chaosel, my guess, has a case pack of about 3.
I think it's 3 is what he said.
Yeah. Now, so that means that people can buy in sets of 3 without breaking a shipping container. You could sell 6 games if you can fit 6 in a case pack, okay? Which is now the big games usually ship in case packs of 3 or more often 4 or 5. But it's something to think about: is how am I going to ship this game? And you have to take into account how many you're going to fit on a pallet, okay? When you get these trucked around, pallets are 40 by 48 inches here in the United States, and roughly the same overseas, and If your games are such, all right, it's 17 inches wide. Figure the box is going to be 18. You could do basically four carton packs on one level of that pallet. Okay, you're going to have a ton of unused space. You're going to use 36 inches of the 40, and then 36 inches of the 48. All right, so you're going to get 12 games per layer. Okay, you just ordered 5,000 games or 2,500 games, and you can only stack a pallet. Max you're going to stack a pallet is 65 to 70 inches tall, okay? You're going to spend a fortune in shipping costs getting this game to your warehouse from the dock or from the manufacturer.
Plus storage,
which is usually a pallet-based fee. So these are things to think about when you design it from a production aspect. The other aspect, in addition to how you're going to ship it, is how you're going to ship it out the door from your place, if you're a distributor, what like that, the distributor's got standard box sizes, okay? The U.S. Postal Service has standard box sizes if you're selling one off, and you're going to look at these, you're going to, if your game, it doesn't fit one of their standard sizes, all of a sudden, someone is unhappy, you or them, about wasting boxes or spending extra money to get custom boxes on it. Now, we've talked about all these things that you could do wrong. What can you do right? Well, let's take a look at the boxes that are out there. One, they're square or rectangular, right, Red?
Right.
Okay, name a triangular game box that's done well. and I'm not joking about that. I think there was Ubi from the guys who did – it was the Trivial Pursuit guys' follow-up game, and it was terrible.
Well, and there, I was going to say, I've seen a few other ones. There was a hexagonal box
Oh yeah, I remember that one. That was one of the. It was bright red, I think. Anyways, go ahead.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, but it was a hexagonal box, not quite as bad, but it's still. It never really ships well, you know. And it was done not because of any content requirement. It was done to look odd on the shelf. It's good for catching people's eyes. Unfortunately, if it doesn't conform to making it easy for a retailer to display it and for people to understand what it is from the edge on, it's still a problem.
Triominos might have come in a triangular box, and that did pretty well. That was a gift set, though. Anyways, long story short, keep your box either rectangular around rough current dimensions, or keep it square along rough current dimensions. Now, there's a reason I'm sure that he made that game 17 by 17, and I'm almost certain it had to do with the size of his game board. Okay.
Actually, I'm not sure if it was his game board per se, which is very likely. Mm-hmm. I wasn't really sure why he chose to do what he did. Having seen it go back in, it fits in nice. It's a very puzzle-oriented game when it goes into its packaging, and he has great interior packaging. It's got a vacuform plastic tray that all the castle pieces fit back into, and you know it stacks very nice.
Yeah.
It's just a large dimension for shipping problems.
Yeah, and again, we raved about the game last week and the designer and all the things he'd done right. And don't mean so we're not slamming on Mark or Castle. It's as a consumer, it's a great game. It's really cool. I'm so glad that he made it because you know we're always rooting for the guy getting that first game out the door. But a 17 by 17 by 4 or 4.5 inch box is it's difficult. Okay, the game's going to have to do well, and you're going to have to push it a little harder to make retailers want to keep it around.
And in Alan's oversized case, it may even be a problem for distributors to ship, and then that becomes yet another problem to add to your woes.
Right. Hey, you know, speaking of bad things you can do with boxes, do you remember the old Games Workshop cardboard?
Which ones?
The ones that weren't really cardboard.
The soft package one?
Yeah. Well, I like the, you know, they basically use that thin white cardboard.
Right.
And now this works great for small boxes. I believe it's called a pop-up or a fold-over box, where you take thin white cardboard, which is cheap to print on, and then you fold up the edges. You double-do the edges. Okay, this is the way Multiman does all their war game products now. And it works great for small boxes. But when you have a 2-foot-long box filled with metal miniatures and you put cellophane on it that breaks if you touch it or look at it wrong, this is not a good idea.
No, it was. No,
it was a terrible. It was lots of damages. Lots of damage and defectives.
Wisely, they got rid of it as quickly as they could.
Yes, they did. But now, you know, what's funny is the thing now is that everyone goes the other way. Everyone's doing board game boxes made out of 80-point chip. I mean, these are really thick game boxes. The standard, by the way, used to be about 40-point. I wish I had some examples right now that I could keep in mind. But game boards are about 80-point chip. Okay, now we're making boxes about out of that same thickness, and it's great because it's they're denuding Siberian forests and polluting Chinese rivers to do that, so we don't have to worry about it. But that's the material has gotten cheap enough that's where that's all coming from. Again, it feels great, but the thicker you make that box, well, a lot of times they'll tear easier over time because the corner stays can't handle that. So, anyways, in terms of size. 10.5 by 10.5 by 3 is the most common box size out there. But always size your box to fit your components, and size your components to fit the market. Would be the absolute pithiest way to describe that. Usually, you size the box to fit the game board, okay? Because that's going to be the component that folds down the least. And if you don't do that, you're going to have stuff slide around, or you're going to have stuff that it just doesn't work. The other thing here to keep in mind is, like Rhett said about retailers, I know I'm rambling a little bit here, Rhett. I want to go ahead and get all of this hardcore information out while I can. The other thing to remember here is that Walmart won't give you more than 10.5 inches of shelf space. All right, the big box retailers are like that. If you have hopes of selling this thing in a big box store, do not ever go bigger than 10.5 inches on a side for your first game. Just don't. And the reason for that is, like I said, they're only going to give you 10.5 inches of shelf space. And if you're 12 by 12, which is kind of the standard European thing, or even was it 11? It's just over 11 by just over 11. They're not interested in the big box stores because the way they do their build-outs and their packaging plans. It's not a packaging plan. What's the technical term for it, Red?
I forget now. I don't even remember.
They lay out the whole store product by product. But
right.
Anyways, long story short, look at other people's boxes before you do yours. Do not make it shaped like a meeple. Do not make it shaped like a hexagon. Do not make it shaped like a tube or a circle or a movie canister. Bang was weird. Bang actually did okay as a bullet. I was really surprised by that. I've seen a lot of them.
Well, and as I said, they did have a flat side to it, so they would stack and you could fit them kind of on a shelf that way.
Yeah, and you know the thing, the other thing to point out about that too is that it fit. You could put it on a normal shelf, right? It wasn't too tall.
Right.
And it only took up about they weren't that big. They were probably about 4.5 inches in diameter. So you could, you know, you could put 4 or 5 of them deep. So it even though it was a non-traditional packaging, that one worked. Kudos to those guys for getting that one right, probably. I say probably because I haven't seen the sales numbers on it, but all right. Red, do we have any more games we want to ding or compliment in terms of their packaging?
Well, actually, I'll go to the new GW Finecast, talk about something that deserves a compliment. There's still a lot of thoughts out there about GW switching, if you haven't heard, from metal to a plastic resin type material for their single figures. And substantial price increases in some, moderate price increases in others. But in any case, what they did that was really nice is they came up with a beautiful new package for all of those. The blister cards. The box sets are pretty much the same stable as the box sets have been. But the blister cards all got full color sleeve covers so the individual pieces showed you a GW, which has beautifully painted miniatures, is their thing, imagery of that figure painted.
And nice.
It's, you know, if you want to sell a GW figure, show a picture of a GW figure painted.
Absolutely correct. And that's, and quite frankly, since, I was going to mention the fact that, you know, you might get that person who thinks that they're pre-painted. But that's a good example of how packaging can reinvigorate a product. And I lost my train of thought, Rhett. Can you believe it? We've only been doing 51 shows. You'd think I'd be able to stay on topic for an entire 30 seconds. Alas, I've lost it completely. All right. On that note, we are done talking about bad retail packaging. And if you have any questions about that,
you can contact us via email at papermoney@purplepawn.com, or you can Skype us, Paper Money Podcast. You can phone us at 773-634-9377.
Or you can check out our RSS feed at purplepawn.com/category/papermoney/feed.
Yeah, and even though we didn't have any listener mail this week, I would like to point out that I did have a couple of fans who kind of wandered by the store, and one of them surprised the heck out of me by asking me to say something a second time and said, "Hey, you're the guy on Paper Money." So a shout out to all of our fans out there who actually, there's at least two, because now I've seen them.
That's awesome. Well, you know, I like to refer to them as listeners.
Listeners.
You know, yes. It's so much more, you know, dignified than fan, but that's awesome. They could, the best part is, right, that they picked you out by voice.
They did.
That's really amazing. And kudos to those guys for listening to the show and being sharp and realizing they were in the presence of greatness.
Or at the
very
least.
Yeah, or at the very least, they were near Rhett. That said, Rhett, what do we got coming up?
Well, let's see. The newest thing we've got coming up is going to be Origins, June 21st.
Yes, that's our show. And then Origins starts what? They keep bumping the date.
I think it's the 20th. It's that Wednesday, so I think that's the 23rd.
Gotcha. So we'll give you something to listen on the drive down to Columbus.
And that's pretty much the big news on what's upcoming.
Yeah, exactly. We'll talk to with Origins right around the corner. And by the way, they say they have sold out yet again for the second year in a row, their exhibitor space. So if you were thinking about it, you're on the fence, it's too late. And yes, anyways, we'll be talking about summer releases. Sorry about that. I lost my train of thought again.
Yes, summer releases. Summer will be our theme.
I should drink more during the show.
And why?
A problem.
I have something wonderful here to drink, so.
Oh, I'm so jealous. I have a good IPA down in the fridge. I'll have to go get it in a minute.
Oh, I was just referring to mine comes from the sky and it's usually nice and filtered and it's called water.
That's not going to help my train of thought. All right.
Well, that's it for this show. I'm Red Kipp.
And I'm Ben Clark.